Today, KC Cafe Radio is thrilled to talk via Skype with John Roy Zatt, a singer-songwriter, fiddler, and guitar picker who plays in several groups as well as solo in the San Francisco Bay Area. John's style is Americana roots with a folky country feel and some bluegrass standards for fun. John's original songs have been recorded by folk music greats like Kate Wolfe and Caroline Herring. John's newest music endeavor are two CDs. The first is John playing and singing all his music on a CD simply titled Solo. The second is a CD that is 10 years in the making of John playing his music with other musicians aptly titled Collaborations. John Roy Zatt, thank you so much for joining us today on KC Cafe Radio.
Hey, it's great to be here. It's really looking forward to our conversation.
How is San Francisco?
This is a time of year to come to San Francisco. May is just gorgeous. It's just beautiful weather. And then along about June and July, it starts to get foggy and cold.
Yeah. I've been to San Francisco, I think, twice in my life, and both times I went, it was kind of chilly.
Yeah. So. You come at the wrong time of year, and a lot of people come in the summertime, and it's cold.
Yeah, it's really
cold.
Yeah.
So we joke about it being our winter.
So are you originally from San Francisco, or did you grow up someplace else?
I grew up all over. My dad was in the military, and we moved a lot. I was born actually over in France, in Paris, and then lived on the East Coast, and then I was in Asia, and in Europe, and then my dad finished his career on the West Coast. And once I got out on my own, I did not move.
Stayed
put.
So how did you get into bluegrass music then, traveling so much?
High school, high school in California, playing folk guitar, singing Peter, Paul, and Mary songs. And then when I went to college, it was just, I went to college in like 66, 67 and on there. And so, Bob Dylan was just breaking, Joan Baez was really big. And so, the folk scene was just kind of ebbing and getting into the whole, psychedelia and the 60s and stuff. So, that's it. And one band that really influenced me was a group called the Holy Modal Rounders. And it was two guys out of New York. I can't remember their names, but the one guy played just great scratchy fiddle. And years later, after I'd learned to play, I started playing fiddle in college. Years later, I listened to it, and the guy is a really good player. His tone and intonation are just spot on, and yet he's just great in getting this great old timey scratchy sound.
Yeah, were they young guys or were they older?
Yeah, they were out of Greenwich Village. Peter Stamfel, I think, is one of the guys' names. But anyway, they were great. I still love listening to them.
I'll have to look them up. That sounds really cool.
Yeah. Holy Modal Rounders.
Holy Modal Rounders. That's a cool name, too.
Yeah.
So how old were you when you first started playing guitar and fiddle?
Let's see. Probably about 15, 14, 15, something like that.
Did you play guitar first and then fiddle?
Yeah. I got into playing fiddle in college. You'd get together and everyone would be banging on our guitars and singing and carrying on. And then I was playing with one guy in particular, and he was the guy that he grew up in Delaware, so he was the guy that turned me on to the Holy Modal Rounders. And I found a fiddle in a prop pile in the theater's basement. It was painted blue. And my roommate got into it and sanded it down, and I glued it together, and I looked up the label inside the fiddle was Jakob Stainer, and I went to the library and looked up Jakob Stainer, or maybe it's Jakobus, but anyway. And he was like number three behind Stradivarius, and I was thinking, oh my,
really? Wow,
this could be something great. And there was a violin maker, repair person in town. This was Los Angeles. So I was going to school near Pasadena at Occidental College, and I walked in with my violin, and I didn't have strings or a bridge or anything. I just glued it together, and I walked in with a thing in a shopping bag, and I said, I think I might maybe have a pretty valuable violin, a Stainer. And the guy is kind of an old crusty guy, like out of the movie The Pawnbroker, and he looked over his glasses at me and said, "It isn't." And it wasn't. They pretty much know all the violins ever made by the greats and know where they are.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I started scratching out, things like Oh Susanna, and I started learning fiddle tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And it just got under my skin. I love the sound of the fiddle.
Mm-hmm. And was this like back in the days of the Hootenannies and River
Magazine?
Yeah,
back in the early 70s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, started really playing fiddle. First year out of college, I worked for the U.S. Geological Survey, and then I decided I really wanted to hang out and play music, and I had friends up in the Sonoma County on the Russian River.
Mm-hmm.
So I moved up there, and I did music full-time for about 6 or 7 years before I got married and needed a job.
Right, yeah. Life kind of gets in the way of music sometimes.
Yeah, well, you got to figure out how to make it work, you know, and some people put it aside, and, you know, for me it's like breathing, you know. I just, even though, you know, you work day jobs, and I had some pretty serious jobs. I worked as a, I just retired last June. I was CFO at a nonprofit that does international development in Afghanistan and all kinds of places.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so a pretty serious day job, but always playing, always in at least one band, and, you know, always writing and playing. So
right,
insanity.
As long as you can support your hobby, that's the important thing.
There you go. Yeah, yeah, exactly.
So when did you start writing music?
I started writing in probably 71, 72, pretty early on, you know, after I was, when I was hanging out up in Sonoma County. It was kind of a nice community of musicians. There was a group that had come down from Canada, four guys who were, you know, trying to make the big time.
Mm-hmm.
Someone gave them bad advice, and they ended up in the backwaters of Sonoma County instead of moving to L.A. But...
Uh-huh.
But anyway, so I was around some really good musicians who were writing, and it kind of inspired me, and, you know, learning folk songs and Crosby, Stills, and Nash, and Neil Young, and of course Bob Dylan, you know, people who were writing just great songs. And
right.
So, you know, you're around all that inspiration, and you think, well, maybe I can do it. And so you start writing, and mostly you write a lot of crappy songs.
Right. Well.
But you need to keep doing it, and, you know, every once in a while you get a good one. And also being around other people who are writing and you know, exchanging ideas and getting feedback and hearing something that they write that's good. And, yeah, so I was just in the right place at the right time, I guess.
So you were writing folk music mainly at that time, or?
Yeah, you know, kind of a little bit of rockabilly, but mostly folk, country, kind of country style stuff. And I wrote Midnight in the Water back there, the words to Midnight on the Water. That waltz was just kind of out in the folk community consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
And the melody is just gorgeous, and the title was so evocative, and
I
was fooling around with it, and, you know, the words just tumbled out. So writing stuff like that.
And Midnight on the Water is on the collaboration CD.
Right.
It's a really beautiful song.
Yeah.
Kate Wolfe recorded that. How did that come about? How did she?
Kate was living up in the Santa Rosa area, and she was just like, you know, kind of the rest of us. She was playing, and I met her at jams or music circles. I don't remember exactly the first time I, you know, hung out and played with her, but she was also, a lot smarter, a lot more business oriented, and she, you know, got things together and recorded, you know, her first album was just excellent, that album Backroads.
Mm-hmm.
And that was recording was a lot harder, you know. I guess you get to be an old timer. I guess I'm an old timer. I'm 62. But
that's not old.
It was analog. Digital was, you know, no one knew what digital was, and it was tape, and you know, it was a big deal to have a four track recorder, and a really big deal to have an eight track recorder. And this is tape, you know. This is so anyway. Kate had her act together and hooked up with a guy and some really good players and recorded her first album, and it was very successful. She was good. She was good about getting out there and you know, playing and promoting it. Yeah. So anyway, I didn't know her really well, but you know, we would cross paths at parties and things like that. Mm-hmm. And when I wrote Words to Midnight on the Water, I was over at her house said, you know, hey, I wrote some words to this song, and I played it for her, and she liked it, and she said, well, do you know, it's okay if I record it. And recording back then was on cassette recorders. Uh-huh. Remember that?
Yeah.
Maybe you don't.
Yes, I do. Yeah.
And so, you know, that was nice, and you know, I didn't think much about it. And I was doing Top 40. I was playing in a hotel lounge band. We were playing five nights a week, and she called me up at like 10 in the morning, which was, I was just getting going. We would play from 9 to 2, and she said, you know, I'm recording, I'm working on my second album, and I'd like to do Midnight on the Water. And I said, great. And then she said, well, are you doing anything? Because she was out recording. She was mm-hmm. She rented a place out in Bodega Bay, and she was out recording, and she wasn't getting the fiddle sound. She had a really good fiddle player in her band, Paul Ellis, and Paul wasn't really kind of locking into the same kind of old-timey type of sound I had on the cassette tape. And she asked if I'd come out, and so I, sure, twist my arm.
No kidding.
yeah, so I drove out there. It's about an hour drive, and I got out there. And lo and behold, they were doing it. She was doing it in the key of E, which is on the fiddle. Key of D, which is where the tune was written and played, is you got a lot more open strings, and you get a lot more drone and more old time sound. So the reason she wasn't getting the sound, or her fiddle player wasn't getting the sound, because it was, you know, in a different
key. Yeah.
And you know, I said, well, you know, I could do it in E if you want, but it won't, you know, it won't sound that much. Or, you know, Paul can do it in E just fine. I mean, he was a better fiddle player than I was, by far. And she said, no, you know, we'll do it in D. And so when you listen to it on her, it's on the Lines on Paper, the second CD, mm-hmm. Second album. she's low. It's low for her range.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so that's the story of Midnight on the Water. And yeah, it's been, I feel really lucky. It was nice, and it's been covered by people, and
yeah.
Every now and then I'm some place, and you know, I'll hear somebody playing the song and singing my words, and that's just, God, that's such a nice feeling.
Yeah. Do you go up there and say, hey, that's my song you're playing?
I don't usually do that. You know, just kind of say, you know, thank you, Lord. You know.
Yeah, that's got to be a big thrill to hear somebody doing your song. And
it's a total high. Yeah, it's so nice when you feel like you've put something out in the world that gives somebody, you know, satisfaction and pleasure and enjoyment.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that, it's a beautiful song, and like I said, it's on the collaboration CD, and so that, for that alone, people should get the CD. But we're also playing it on KCCafe Radio, so
yeah,
people will hear that song if they tune into KCCafe Radio, or they can even request it on our request page as well. So
yeah, thanks. I'm really happy with the recording. I think that one came out really nicely.
Yeah.
I like the way it came out.
Mm-hmm. And so let's talk a little about the collaboration CD. It took 10
sure.
years to record this CD, right? Like with just collaborations with people over the years? And
yeah, exactly. It was, you know, as I was, you know, I had my home studio going, and I was, you know, learning and doing recording. And yeah, so, you know, I'd record some songs, and It wasn't that I started 10 years ago and said I'm going to make a CD of songs that I'd collaborate with you know, my music pals on. Mm-hmm. It was just that you know, I'd record a song, and you know, gradually I accumulated enough of them to put together on a CD.
And a lot of these people are people you've played with in groups and.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Different configurations. There's a group of guys. It's kind of my core music buddies. We play in a band called Don't Look Back, and we do a lot of covers. We do a lot of current Americana and old time, and a little bit of swing, jazz, and just kind of a whole mixture of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so that they're kind of the mainstay on that. Brian Bloom, John Bidwell, are the main guys. Willie Pettis, mm-hmm. isn't that a great name?
Yeah.
And then a couple of different guys playing bass, depending on the recording. Dan Kozarski on the earlier recordings, and Dale Scott on the later ones.
Uh-huh. And some of the songs on collaboration are live as well. So.
Yeah, got a couple of nice recordings out of a performance we did at the Freight and Salvage in Berkeley. And so I thought, well, yeah, it's always nice to catch a good live performance.
And how did they record that live? Did they plug into the board, or did they just get an audio?
It was just through the board. Yeah, it wasn't any special thing. It was basically just from the board. But, well, it's the new Freight. The Freight and Salvage is a long-time institution on the West Coast. You know, it's a really nice venue, and the board got inspired about 5 years ago to build a new venue, and they raised a bunch of money, and they built really just a world class venue for acoustic folk, you know, Americana music, and that opened, I think, 2 years ago. And that, so this recording was done at the New Freight, and they've got the latest and greatest in terms of sound systems.
Very cool. So you said most of the songs you do with your band, Don't Look Back, it's like a Texas swing style?
No, I would say it's more Americana. We do some Texas swing, but more Americana, like Greg Brown kind of stuff, maybe, or John Prine.
Okay.
Type of tunes, and it's a full acoustic lineup. Although I play a little bit of electric guitar with it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. So is fiddle the main instrument that you play with a group, or you also just?
Yes. Yeah. That's mostly what I play. Sometimes if I'm singing lead, sometimes I'll switch off and play guitar.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of times when I'm singing lead, I'll play fiddle.
I see. Okay. I wanted to, since we were talking about the CD collaborations, I was going to ask you about the song Crazy Glue, which is one of my favorite tunes on there.
Oh, thanks. Thanks. That's so fun to play for people.
It's a really great song that kind of is a testament to what true love is and how true love lasts for years.
Yeah.
Did you write that about your relationship with your wife, or...?
I actually wrote it about my parents. My parents' relationship with each other. My parents were real scrappers. It was a little tough being around them growing up, but you know, they truly loved each other. They were together over 60 years.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. That was the inspiration. I was just fooling around with the idea. It kind of came out pretty quickly. Mm-hmm. You know, some songs take a long time, and sometimes some songs just they just kind of show up.
Yeah, they're a gift.
Yeah, exactly. And it's I love performing that song. It's so fun to watch the audience, because couples, you know, kind of will turn and look at each other and kind of smile knowingly.
Uh-huh. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I guess. Yeah, you do fight. You do work things out.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, you still love each other. So.
That's right. The love is the glue that holds you together.
Yeah, and another song that I like a lot is "Don't Let Your Deal Go Down," which is almost an opposite of of "Crazy Glue."
Yeah. That's a standard. That's a traditional one. I learned it from a band many, many years ago. Just was a local band. I heard him play it at the Sweets Mill Festival, which is a West Coast festival out near Fresno.
So how do you find the songs that you cover, the traditional songs that you do? Is it just through working with other people and sharing songs?
Yeah, you hear a song, you know, you hear it on a radio, or, you know, you hear it at a jam session, and you say, wow, that's one I really want to learn. A recent one that I've been working on that I just picked up is The Bramble and the Rose. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember who wrote it, but you know I play a lot. You know, if I'm not gigging, I'm jamming. So
yeah,
run across stuff, and stuff just kind of calls to you.
Yeah,
it just really resonates. I really like I'm really drawn to the lyric. I like a lyric that I can relate to, and sometimes, you know, you'll hear a song that just sounds so great, and then you'll you'll learn it, and you'll get the lyric, and it'll be so disappointing. The lyric doesn't really say anything, or yeah. What it says is kind of, you know, trite.
So you do your own lyric then? Is that what you do sometimes?
No, I don't typically rewrite a song. Typically, I won't do it that much. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I'll tinker with a lyric. I've got a Gillian Welch song that I really like, and my apologies to Gillian, but I wanted to tinker with her lyric a little bit, make it fit more for me.
Mm-hmm. Which one is that?
I don't quite even remember the name of it. It's a song about a blackbird.
Okay.
She's got the birds change colors in her song. There's a red bird and a blue bird, and I like it to be a blackbird all the way through. But you know, there's so many great writers. There's so many wonderful songs.
Yeah.
It's so many more people playing music now. Mm-hmm. It's wonderful. It's really rich.
Yeah, one of my favorite Gillian Welch song that I actually perform is "Tear My Steelhouse Down."
Oh yeah,
I love that song.
Great song. Yeah. I've done that one with "Don't Look Back." We performed that one.
What a powerful song. That's a fun song.
She's brilliant. She's just a brilliant writer.
Mm-hmm. So you collaborate a lot with people. How do those collaborations come about? Are you like well known there in the San Francisco Bay Area, and people give you calls and say, "Hey, come over and play on our CD," or "Come and join us on our gig," or how does it usually happen?
I wouldn't say I'm well known. You know, I mean, I've got kind of my community, and it's amazing. Sometimes you'll meet somebody and they'll have a whole other community of players that you never even knew were out there. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just so many good players. I don't know about your neck of the woods, but boy, out here in the Bay Area, I mean, and there's the South Bay community, there's the Santa Cruz community, there's the North Bay community, and then there's all the Sacramento out in the valley. It's a hotbed.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I know quite a few people, and I've gotten to the point now. I've really been focusing on my solo stuff, so I've kind of, you know, said no to, you know, turn down stuff. I've got kind of two bands, different groups that I play with, and plus I'm doing my solo stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So that keeps me more than busy.
So is bluegrass, Americana, is that a really popular style there in San Francisco?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, kind of that continuum, you know, from folk to bluegrass. I mean, bluegrass is it's like saying jazz anymore. It's such a wide genre. I mean, I should be telling you. You know more about genres than I do, but at least from my perspective, it's everything from Bill Monroe to Alison Krauss to, you know, psychograss.
Right. Yeah. They're putting it under the umbrella now that they call Americana, which is kind of a roots Americana or something like that.
Yeah.
It's sort of the umbrella.
Yeah. That's very, very, very big out here. There's a lot of that going on. And then there's, you know, the kind of the electrical version of it, kind of the more heading more towards rockabilly.
Mm-hmm.
Or John Mellencamp or Bruce Springsteen, you know, strong stories,
right.
But with a little bit more of a beat and a drive to them.
Yeah, I think that's really what probably separates, you know, Americana style is the songs really have to tell a story, or there has to be a real emotion to it lyrically.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. I completely agree. Yeah, that fits. That really makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because Americana, a lot of people scratch their head and say, "Well, what's that?"
Mm-hmm. Right.
It's such a broad category. But yeah, it's a song. It's the strength of the song.
So you said you're playing solo a lot. That kind of leads to the solo CD, which we're also playing on KC Cafe Radio.
Yeah, thank you.
And there's several songs I really like on this one as well. "Triple Y to You," probably one of my favorites. Where did that song come from, and how did you write that one?
Let's see, that was probably a couple of years old now. The best way for me to write I'll have something going and I'll write kind of in my day to day, but if I'm away, like I'm on a vacation or something like that, I usually will carve out the morning to just write. And so I was down in Belize. My my girlfriend has a daughter-in-law down there, and so we went down there for a couple of weeks, out basically in the jungle, and on this gal's farm, and I was kind of marooned. Uh-huh. I would never do it again. It was blazingly hot. Uh-huh. But anyway, so I just kind of holed up under the fan and I wrote. So I wrote a bunch of songs when I was down there, and this was one of them. So I keep an idea book and collect song fragments and song ideas, and then when I get a nice chunk of time to really devote to writing, then I work off those idea books.
Mm-hmm.
And I usually write kind of with the guitar in my hand.
Uh-huh. Do you find that there's certain chords or certain progressions or keys that you stay in?
Yeah. And you try to break out of it. You try to do some variety, but this one was a little bit more. It's more like a blues. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a fun song because the progression. It's not like a 12-bar blues. Although when you first hear it, you think, oh, it's a 12-bar blues. But when I'm playing it at a jam session, I have to tell people this is not 12-bar blues.
Uh-huh.
Well, you watch out for the changes. It's just three chords, but they're gonna happen more in the style of a country song.
Yeah.
And yet it sounds more kind of like a blues. But yeah, that was a fun one. That was a fun.
It's a nice tune. And Moths to a Flame is another one of my favorites.
Thank you. That one is a real personal connection. I wrote that one a little bit longer ago, probably more about 10 or 12 years ago. Again, I was on vacation. I was down in Mexico, and I was writing, and I was thinking about this high school friend of mine. And at the time I wrote that song, I'd lost track of him. And the song kind of tells the story. He had a problem with alcohol, and it really wrecked his life. And I'd lost track of him, and I didn't know if he was alive or dead when I wrote the song. And he was such a creative, fun guy in high school. And we hung out together from time to time, and then he just kind of went off the deep end.
Mm.
I got a call, you know, I don't know, 3 or 4 years after I'd written the song, from somebody who was organizing a high school reunion. And I asked if, I'm trying to get a hold of this guy. Is he around? Do you have his contact information? And I got his email address. So it was great. So we reconnected, and I was down in L.A. visiting my family a couple of years ago, and I went down to Oceanside, which is where I went to high school, Carlsbad. And then we got together. It was great. So the guy's doing pretty good.
Wonderful.
Had a drink in 15 years, yeah.
So the song's got a happy ending to it, then.
Well, the song doesn't, actually.
Yeah. Well, the real story is what I meant to say. The real story does.
The song has a happy postscript.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. But, I have a lot of feeling in that song. That one.
Yeah, I wrote a song about a high school reunion, too, so it kind of, I was kind of drawn to that song maybe a little bit, too. So.
Yeah, I can get choked up when I play that song.
So when you recorded Solo, how long did it take to do that CD?
Solo was quite different. I worked with an engineer. I had done a little bit of stuff working with an engineer, but I'd never done a full project working with a real experienced pro. And so I said, okay, I'm going to bite the bullet. I really want to put together an album that will, you know, demonstrate what I can do as a solo artist. And I want to do the, you know, the best job I can. And I hooked up with a guy here in the East Bay. Randy Rood is his name, R-O-O-D. And I pretty much laid down the basic tracks in about a week.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, since it's essentially me singing and playing the guitar and tapping my foot, there wasn't a lot to it. And it was pretty much recorded live.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of cleanup on foot tap, and then I went back and added the fiddle part. It's pretty hard to play the fiddle and sing at the same time, although I did it on Little Rabbit.
Mm-hmm.
But so it was pretty tight project. Spent about a week or so recording the tracks, and then spent about, you know, 2 weeks doing the mix. And it was a great experience working with Randy. Learned a ton.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so different working with someone who's been doing it for 30 years and who has all the best gear in the world.
Mm-hmm.
And you still kind of have to slug it out, figuring out, you know, getting your tones right. And I told him at one time, I said, yeah, I can't believe how hard it is to get the tones and all that stuff. And he said, actually, it's harder when you've got just vocal and guitar.
Mm-hmm.
Because everything is so important.
Yeah, it's naked.
Exactly. Yeah. Nothing's getting covered or balanced out or kind of smoothed out.
Mm-hmm.
It's all right there in your face. So we spent a lot of time on, tone and equalization. You know, just getting a good sound. And you know, and he was using great mics. He was using, you know, better mics than I'll ever have.
Yeah.
So, but it was really interesting. It was really interesting. Learned a lot. And we did the whole thing in about three weeks. Yeah. I kind of had a deadline. I wanted to have it when I went to the Folk Alliance conference.
Mm-hmm.
Out here in the West Coast. So we recorded in September, and the conference was in October.
Cool. That's so, something that we want to come out and do sometime, is go to the Folk Alliance. It looks like a lot of fun.
Oh, it's fantastic. Yeah. Now the Folk Alliance, boy, they're five regions. And the far West, this is called the Folk Alliance Region West, F-A-R West, is very active. And it just great. It was my first time last year, and I'm definitely going again. I learned a ton. It's like a business conference for folk musicians, if you can. It sounds like an oxymoron.
Yeah, it does.
But it's really excellent, and really a wonderful community.
Who would you say is your major influence musically?
There's so many. You know, in terms of songwriting, Gillian Welch is huge. Bob Dylan's huge. I mean, talk about a genius.
Mm-hmm.
He writes so many fantastic songs that sound quite different from each other.
I don't know how the guy can come up with as many lyrics as he comes up with for a song.
He's brilliant. So Bob Dylan for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Paul Simon is wonderful. Some of the old-timey folks, obviously Bill Monroe,
mm-hmm.
Charlie Poole. I love Cajun kind of stuff. I do, you know, in my cover bands. I've done Doug Kershaw songs.
Those are fun songs.
Hank Williams. I really like Hank Williams singing. Very, very soulful singing. Neil Young, you know, I can just keep going. The names pop into my head.
Yeah, everybody you've mentioned are people that I admire a great deal as well. So.
Yeah, yeah. And on the gal side, I mean, Alison Krauss, what a brilliant band.
Mm-hmm.
Just talk about perfection and beautifully crafted music. There's another woman who's not as well known, Claire Lynch, who is also out of Tennessee. Does great stuff. Do you know her, Claire Lynch?
I have not heard of her, no.
Yeah, check her out. She's really good. And
okay.
I really like her songs. Her songs are really well crafted, and you know, the lyrics, you know, are a lot of content in them.
Yeah. I was going to ask you too. I noticed on the cover of Solo that you have a Martin guitar there.
Yeah.
Is that your guitar of choice, and is that what you recorded the songs on? Was a Martin?
Yeah, that's what I recorded on. I actually like to play electric, and I'm mostly playing electric now. And the reason is because the touch on electric guitar is so much more like a fiddle. I mean, for me anyway, I find acoustic guitar kind of like a wrestling match. It takes a lot more finger strength.
Yeah.
And a lot, you know, it's a lot more wrestling with a thing.
Yeah.
And with electric, you can be a lot more subtle. And it's a challenge because I love the sound of acoustic guitar. And You know, I'll record with acoustic guitar. I'm working on a recording right now, and it just, you know, you have to, it's a traditional fiddle waltz, and you got to have an acoustic guitar.
Right.
But in terms of performing now, mostly I'm performing with electric. I've got a Gretsch, so it's kind of it's a lot of fun. It's just a lovely guitar. It's a little mellower sound. It's not quite as biting as like a Telecaster or, you know.
It's a little heavier sound.
Yeah, it's a little more mellow.
Yeah.
But
not as twangy.
yeah. Now, I do love the twang.
Yeah.
But for my own playing, if I'm sitting around and playing, I'll be mostly playing on electric, just because it's easier on my arms and fingers. You know, mm-hmm. You play a lot. You kind of have to take care of the bod.
Right. Yeah.
Tend to not, you know, between working on the computer and playing music, it's a lot of demands on the tendons and joints.
What kind of fiddle do you play?
I just got a new fiddle. And it's a European fiddle. I don't even know the maker of it, because the label is bogus. A lot of the labels were really kind of silly. You know, and that's why people think they have a Stradivarius violin.
Mm.
But the label is really just saying it's a Stradivarius style.
Yeah.
So it's an unknown maker. It's a European maker, and I decided I'd kind of was ready for a better violin, and I spent about 2 months last fall shopping, and it was so fun. If you're a serious shopper, you get to take the violin home. So I had about five really nice violins at my house, and I could just kind of trade around with them, and I'd take them to jams, and it was fascinating, because you'd say, well, this is my favorite, when you're sitting around, you know, the living room playing it, but then you go to a jam session and you see how the instrument works with other instruments, and you'll end up by picking another one.
Yeah, my son, actually, this past Christmas, he asked for a violin he's 8 years old, and he asked for a violin.
Oh, that's great.
And
wow.
So I got him a violin, you know, like a little beginner guitar violin.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Great. Kind of looking into getting him lessons this summer on the violin.
Great.
So maybe I'll have a fiddle player in my house pretty soon.
Yeah. Is he like fiddle music, or is he more oriented towards classical or jazz, or what?
He just loves music that he can move to. So I would
great.
Say probably bluegrass and country.
Uh-huh.
And
oh, fantastic.
So
there's so much great music out there. I mean, I started playing the fiddle by learning fiddle tunes.
Mm-hmm.
And there's you know, there's fiddle player communities everywhere.
John, I really appreciate you talking with us today.
Yeah, thank you, Kathy. It's been a pleasure.
And I want to make sure everyone knows about your CDs.
Appreciate that.
John has two CDs. One is called Solo, and the other one is called Collaborations, both of which you can hear cuts from on KC Cafe Radio. Or you can go to John's website, which is www.royzat.com. And you can also look up his music on CD Baby and purchase it on iTunes and Amazon as well. So there's a lot of options there. Anything else you wanted to add, or?
Well, just thank you to KC Cafe Radio. It's just fantastic. I really appreciate the support and the community. It's wonderful. I really appreciate it. Thank you very much to you and your colleagues.
No problem.
We do.
Are you touring anywhere, or do you just stay right there in the San Francisco Bay Area, or do you get out much?
Yeah, not touring. That's kind of the one year out plan. I'm mostly working on getting stuff together. I'm doing a lot of work on video. I want to, you know, I'm essentially working on content. I want to do another album. You know, started recording a third CD. So about a year out. I'm looking basically in spring of 2013 to start getting out beyond the Bay Area.
Well, John, thanks so much, and we'll be listening for you on KC Cafe Radio.
Okay, thanks so much, Kathy.